Mother, man.
This here old Creole, Robert Benoit, and you listening to Murder Metal Mayhem. Aye!
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal Mayhem!
All right. What the fuck is going on?
What's up, motherfuckers?
Ooh,
we back.
Fuck yeah. Back in Horns High Studios doing this podcast for the Horns High Podcast Network. Some Murder Metal Mayhem tonight. Episode 144. Chris, getting close.
Boom, almost there, man.
Getting close to 150. So that'll be going down tonight. Episode 144. Of course, got Joey and Chris in here with me. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Doing, good, doing well. Chris, very sorry to hear about your grandfather. Oh, shit. I know the funeral was Saturday, and a lot of people on Facebook reached out, so
hell yeah, dude.
I know, you know, it's tough, man.
It's all good. We knew it was coming. I mean, it's still a sad thing. It was my grandpa. He's fucking badass, but everybody's doing good.
Good, good.
It's been all right.
That's good.
I'm going to actually tell a little mayhem story about while we was down at his funeral. So.
Okay, that sounds good. What shirt are you got on over there, Chris?
I got the old Cannibal Cookout shirt on, man. That was nice. Such a great fucking show. Fucking A, man.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Joey, what about you, man?
Tonight, I got that Chlamydia Jizz shirt on.
Oh, boy.
Durin Trash's fucking shit. And I got the Gore Pot hat on from Taiwan.
I got the Chalk hat on.
I still have the fucking...
the Chalk hat.
Yeah.
I still have the Megadeth Rust in Peace Bic lighter.
It's still going.
Now, I feel like it's on its way out. I even brought a secondary one. So if I still have this one on our next podcast, I'll call it a Mega Life like the other one.
Okay.
And I will swear by Megadeth Bic lighters.
Yeah. No, like that's pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive. And I've got the my new Flotsam and Jetsam shirt. I just got the Blood in the Water album cover.
Sick,
it's fucking badass. I love the album. I bought the CD as well. And love supporting the bands when I can. And I really dig those guys. So, hell yeah.
That's cool. You were talking about, you know, you listen to it and you're like, holy fuck. So then you start going back.
Yeah.
I did that with a... I think with Deicide, I got to like fucking the fifth album or something like that. And I just kind of like just was bored with them, I think, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't listen to nothing they put out for like a while just because I just didn't care.
Right.
And then it's fucking listened.
Sick.
And then I went back and listened to something again. I was like, you know what? This shit's still badass as
it
fuck. And then
badass.
I went back and listened to all the other ones. And I was like, okay.
I went on a dive for Deicide a couple weeks ago after he brought him up. And I'm like, fuck, yeah. These guys are so sick.
Deicide's so nasty.
Yeah, I mean, I go in my little death metal spurts like that. And Malice's Wake reminds me a lot of Deicide. Very badass. But, yeah, and of course, we were talking earlier that we're going to have a new addition to the studio, Chris.
You're
pregnant? No, we don't. I look like I am, but I'm not. No, Chris, we got a new...
Yes, we do. About to get a Richard Ramirez
from
Sick Rick Mast. Man.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
His new Ramirez mask looks so badass. The sculpture of it, we don't know exactly what it's going to look like all painted
up. Yeah,
the
sculpture for the mold. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, really, really cool. Rick Fisher of Sick Rick Masks. We've got six of his masks in here.
Right, man.
And so that'll be number seven, but definitely love that stuff, and I can't wait to get it. He's done with the sculpture. Now he's got to make the mold, and he does it all by hand, old school in his basement, like a little basement studio, very low-key, listens to tunes and just cranks out the shit. He's got a couple of friends that come over to help him paint,
hell
and he's
yeah.
doing like mass, like when he first does the
mass
Ramirez.
Production. Yeah.
Because he's making, you know, like 40 of them, I think, in the first run. And so we're within the first one or two,
we're
getting ours. And we won't say what it is, but we made a special request hoping that Rick can do that. So that was a good suggestion, Joey. All right, now last week we busted out a bonus episode for you guys on the Silent Twins.
A little short guy.
Yeah, and a very interesting topic, though, that you brought up, Chris, the twin girls from the UK, man, very weird.
It is an odd story for sure. If you haven't listened to it, check it out, because even when they were separated, they did the same
things,
and
That's like, so creepy. And they had that
death pact, like, one of us has to die in order for the other one
to live.
To live a normal life and right. not be like the way we are, which is fucked up.
Man. It is fucked up. And they had their own language and they, like you said, did everything the same. It was really weird and very interesting, though. And we had about 900 listens to that when I checked it today. So that's cool. People digging on that. And if you missed it, go check it out. It's like 45 minutes, 50 minutes, something like that. So it's a short episode, but it's only on that topic, and that's why it's a bonus. All right, now tonight we got a good one. This has been on the list for a little while. We got our buddy Tex
coming on with us. He's a good guy.
We love talking to Tex, the prison corrections officer that comes on to talk to us anonymously about his experience working in prisons, death row. He's done some pretty brutal stuff. And we knew with this one, Chris,
he's a killer.
with this one on Alcatraz, the most infamous prison that's probably ever been there, it should be awesome. So we're going to be talking about that one when we get to our murder segment. We've done a lot of prison stories, and I was going to tell you guys, number five.
Is that what it is? I was curious.
Most listened to, you won't believe it.
Oh.
Currently, the number five most listened to Murder Metal Mayhem episode on a prison. It's on a prison. It's right. number five of all of our podcasts. Right. Well, what do you think, Chris? Number five most listened to Murder Metal Mayhem episode.
Dolphin?
The Black Dolphin. That was the first one, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
So too, yeah.
So that was a good episode. And if you missed that one, go check it out. I don't know what number it is offhand.
I thought you were saying for a second that this was the fifth prison one that we did.
No, I know we've done more. Like that. I'm not sure. We've done Attica. We've done the Texas 7. We did the Virginia prison break, New Mexico prison riot, Black Dolphin. So this is probably about seven, maybe. Yeah.
Good handful of them.
Yeah, so we tend to dig those, and our listeners obviously do. So there's been some very infamous inmates, of course, at Alcatraz, and the escape stories are crazy. There's that one I mentioned in the notes about that gunfire shit. Yeah, that was fucking crazy.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that one I'd never heard of. Of course, the famous one from 62. Right, I was going to say,
you've heard of all a bunch of the other ones, but movie. When I was reading the notes and saw the one about the gun, like, I had to look into it more to see what.
Yeah,
and I
was like, badass.
I was like, this ain't the most known one, but this is the craziest one.
It was. Yeah. It really was. So I'm anxious to get to it, and we'll have Tex with us for that. And, of course, CK warming up, ready to throw down. We thought it was, you know, appropriate. CK brought up, you know, why don't we do the band Alcatraz?
Right.
Duh. Spelled with two Z's instead of one. But they're like an 80s kind of, you know, just 80s metal band. But most people know the infamous, so to speak, guitar player Yngwie Malmsteen came from there. So CK is going to dig into that one in the metal segment. So stay tuned. I'm always anxious to hear about bands I don't know anything about, and I don't know a damn thing about Alcatraz other than Yngwie Malmsteen played with them. So,
I don't even know who that is, and it's weird because I've seen that name twice today, and I don't even know who the fuck that is, and I've seen it twice today.
He's like a solo guitar player, does like, he has singers in his band now, he's singing, and a lot of people think he sucks. Right. But he's an unbelievably good guitar player.
Yeah, just as far as talent-wise, he is probably top 10 guitars of all time.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. All right. So, but he's very pompous.
Yeah, his attitude. That. He's got a shitty attitude. That's what knocks him down a little bit.
So, anyway, Yngwie comes from there. And we'll get into that with CK and some other metal news, too. Killer Cage Match tonight. Chris, we got some listeners to say thank you to.
Yes, we do. We have Mason Robertson, one of our fucking winners. And we have Josh Walls, and we got Stephen Lyle. So thank you all, motherfuckers. Y'all are great. Thanks for listening, and thanks for participating.
Yeah, Stephen or Steven, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but Steven commented and said that he's fallen behind in his Murder Metal Mayhem listening, and he needed to catch up. So that's good, Steven. Get on the program with it. But thanks for the support.
Yeah.
Of course. We have a good one tonight, yeah. though.
We don't have a good one
we
at all.
We don't have a good one at all.
It's a good one, but this
two
is...
two pieces of shit.
No, it's just so obvious.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be fun just to see one person get decimated. So who we have tonight is, first off, you have the fucking Iceman of the fucking Ma, Richard Kuklinski.
He's out there fucking killing.
And who's he going to go fight up against? Richard Speck.
Right? Now, titties in prison.
Right, Speck, I was going to say.
It's going to be the nurse killing Speck, at least that.
Okay, okay. Okay, I was going to ask. We have to specify because with Speck, you got two spectrums there.
Right. Two spectrums.
But either way, oh my God, Kuklinski.
Man.
We'll get into
it. It's
going
to be great. Yeah.
We haven't had like a David and Goliath match in a while. So.
Right. Yeah. Whenever we get Vlad the Impaler or one of them in here, it's like, okay, you know, or Panzram or Matheny, you know, any of those. So Kuklinski definitely falls into that category. And, of course, they're going to have two objects to fight with to make it interesting and a variable. So we'll do that in the Mayhem segment, one of our favorite segments of the show. Thanks to everybody out there listening to the podcast. We keep seeing those numbers roll in this week. With
you guys are the
you
shit.
Take it, Joey.
Hell yeah.
2,500 listens. So thanks. Even on a bonus week, we did well. And so that's awesome, and we appreciate that. Well, Chris and Joey, we got a lot on our plate tonight.
Right.
We're heading to San Francisco Bay, where the water is a bit chilly.
Got sharks in it, too.
Little shark action going on. Hoping we don't end up being the next meal. So,
God damn it, let's get our fucking prison break on.
Fuck yeah, some Megadeth.
Old school Megadeth. Island.
Hell yeah, some old school Megadeth from the Peace Sells album. Hell bringing back some memories for me, seeing them on that tour. And holy, I love that song, Devil's Island. So I had to play that. We got our old buddy Tex on with us.
What up, Tex?
He's worked in prisons for years, and good to have you on, Tex. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. Like we were talking before, had some weather issues earlier, but it cleared up.
They didn't want to fuck with Tex, man.
Yeah, no shit. Just wanted to say, last week's episode, that Silent Twins, man, I really enjoyed
that. Oh, cool.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it.
That was an interesting story, you know, really unique.
Yep.
Awesome, awesome.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Well, tonight we're going to be talking about Alcatraz, the federal penitentiary known as The Rock and Devil's Island, a very unique former prison that sits on an island near San Francisco, originally a military prison, but became a federal prison to house the worst of the worst inmates from other prisons.
They'd be like, oh, you a bad boy. You grounded now.
Yeah, they said that some of the wardens had a picture of Alcatraz on their desk.
Yeah.
And if they had to deal with somebody repeatedly, they pointed that, say, that's where you're fucking going. So it was definitely very scary. And we're going to talk about the infamous inmates they had, some of the daring escapes, some crazy shit, stuff I didn't even know about. We were talking about in the intro, Joey, just crazy, man. So it's going to be a good one tonight. And Tex, what is it, do you think, about Alcatraz that just seems to fascinate people? There's been songs written, movies made, books. It's just got something about it. What is it?
To me, it's like four different things, man. It's on an island in the middle of freaking the bay.
Right.
It's got the big name convicts. It's the end of the line for everybody.
Pretty much, yeah.
And supposedly inescapable.
Yeah.
So that's what fascinates me about the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree, man. It is got all of those things, like you just said. Joey, I mean, we've talked about other prison escapes before. But there's been some crazy ones, and we're going to dig into that. But I know you said there were some you didn't even know about.
No, I mean, as far as the escapes in Alcatraz, that, like Tex was saying, it's supposed to be inescapable. So anybody that was making the attempt to do it, that's some big news.
Oh,
and not to mention, I mean, it probably some of those guards and shit, like you find out they're gone, of course you're like worried about it.
Right.
There's still probably part of you in your mind where you're like, man, are these motherfuckers gonna make it or not?
Right. Oh, I'm sure.
I bet you they were putting money out on that shit. Like,
I would.
I got 10 that says he makes it. I got 20 says
we're gonna find him on the shore all tore up. Right. Now, Chris, our listeners,
What's the over under on this shit right here.
Yeah.
Our listeners, Chris, really seem to like the prison episodes. We just mentioned that the fifth most listened to Murder Metal Mayhem was our Black Dolphin episode. Just showed up in the top five just the other day.
Yeah, so. Fucking, I think they'll probably enjoy this one, the way we do shit. We're stupid.
but have a little fun with it.
But yeah, it's fun to listen to, because everybody knows Alcatraz. You hear Alcatraz, you know.
Right.
But it's still coming from a different person's perspective or whatever. Right.
And we use a lot of sources. Like, I read a book specific to one inmate's experience.
Right.
Right.
That I guarantee you that if you listen to another podcast, they're not going to reference that specific book.
One book, right.
But I really dug in deep with this one. I probably watched 7 or 8 documentaries. I read that book, did some independent research. A lot of things I didn't know. So I always love doing this. Right. Learn a lot doing these podcasts with you guys. Now, as I've mentioned before in other episodes, my dad worked as a parole officer in New York, so I've heard tons of prison stories from him over the years at the table. No escapes that I remember, but the institution he worked at the longest, Bedford Hills, which is a triple max women's prison, was the first or one of the first in New York, I believe, to do the razor wire. And he had had a couple of inmates try to get out and like bled out before they made it very far. Right. So
that ain't no fucking game right there.
No, not at all. Wire.
Not you ever fuck all. Around with it, Tex? How sharp is that shit?
With razor wire?
How sharp is that for real?
Well, I almost cut my thumb off in the Army on some concertina wire. That's kind of closest thing to the razor wire. But the razor wire is kind of, it's a little bit sharp.
Goddamn.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, I don't want to fuck with it.
Definitely. And, you know, the unique thing about Alcatraz is it's only a mile and a quarter from San Francisco, which is crazy, which seems to fascinate. It's that close, but
like you drive across the bridge and there's Alcatraz right there and shit.
It's
like,
really unique. Mm-hmm.
In a Midwest sense, that's how I feel about Pontiac prison.
Exactly.
Because it's in the middle of Pontiac. It's not on the edge like all the other
prisons. It's fucking scary looking.
Right.
Man.
You go to the middle of Pontiac, you're looking at town, Castle still, Gray School.
It's kind of on the south end, but it's like
it's an old school, like gothic looking fucking prison. Yeah. It's pretty frightening. They're on lockdown like 24/7 there, and they have been for like 20 years. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, ain't fucking around.
No, it's harsh. They was asked to do a training course there for my day job, and I was like, fuck you. I'm not going in that place. That's fucked up.
As our list of prison ones goes on, that's one that I've always thought we should do sometime.
Yeah.
Because there's stories out of there.
There have
sure.
been, And Meister's brother was a guard there.
My uncle retired from there. My cousin, his son fucking works there right now.
Oh shit.
I don't know nothing about them like that. Like,
right.
I don't
It's a scary looking place. Yeah. But so we can somewhat relate. Now, Tex, from your perspective, don't inmates try a lot to blot out the real world to kind of make it easier to do the time, or would they like to see life going on and maybe feel less isolated? What is the deal with that?
Well, just a quick story. We had an inmate. Her name was Betty C. I will call her because she's still incarcerated. She was a really, really tough bitch. She was like kicking correctional officers' asses, kicking convicts' asses.
Just fighting all the time.
But one time we had she had a visitation and her mom was there. So she looked like a stud broad, like, I don't know, like a freaking male wrestler most of the time. But when she came on her little visit, she looked prim and proper. She had makeup on.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Had her hair did.
To be, you know what I mean? To be around by her mom and shit, though.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. So, while they're in the prison environment, most of the time they'll play the part. But when it comes to outside influence, they tend to go back to outside roles.
Interesting. Interesting.
That's fucking awesome.
For like the most part, you know, the outside world, like watching TV and stuff like that is a good thing, because 97% of all inmates, at least in Texas, are going to be released back out into society. Right. So, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want people
holed up and,
you know, and yeah, institutionalized going back out
in
the population.
Yeah, I'm sure the recidivism would be much higher with that going on. So right. Now, the name Alcatraz, I learned, comes from when California was under Spanish rule. The Spanish naval officer Juan Manuel de Ayala, I think I pronounced that right, in 1775 discovered it. It ended up being named Alcatraz, which is the Spanish word for pelican, and it was also known as the Island of the Pelicans. So,
were there pelicans?
Pete, can I say it?
Yes.
Alcatraz means pelican. I heard that in another podcast.
Did you? Yeah. So, but I've also heard other translations of the word from different sources I read and watched. There's a shitload of fucking seagulls and pelicans there, among other birds on the island. You hear them constantly. I was thinking, would that drive you nuts?
If you're fucking, hence Birdman.
Or would you
but
be,
you can't keep them there.
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that later.
That is different.
We will, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, man.
Now, the 1850s, it was a military fort to guard the San Francisco Bay from naval attacks from other countries. I watched a really good documentary about that. The main prison building was built from 1910 to 1912. It was used as a military prison at first. The U.S. Department of Justice acquired the prison in 1933.
When you say acquired, they took it.
Right. Well, of course, in a nice way. Yeah.
When you say acquired, they took it.
They took it over. Yeah. And they decided to use it as a federal penitentiary. The buildings were modernized. Security tightened up so it could be used as a federal prison.
I mean, it's almost something straight out of like Pulp Fiction from the fucking, you know, back in the day. Alcatraz, this fucking prison on this fucking island in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by treachery and unescape. I mean, everything about it screams like movie script.
Exactly. Yeah, it just lends itself to it. Yep. Yeah, for sure. And then as Tex said, you know, that the whole lore of it was this inescapable prison with these frigid waters and sharks and these currents that would bring out to the ocean and you would drown. So, you know, many are going to test that theory. We're going to talk about that. And I thought it was interesting, the warden and staff that lived on the island in housing, that was pretty crazy. You know, these kids like skipping in a yard with this ominous cell house in the background, kind of crazy.
Who lives over there?
Right.
Man, you know how fucking, I mean, that's fucking crazy to think about. You live there with your fucking family, and it's like, if anyone escapes from all these worst of the worst inmates, you're the one of the only families on this island.
Right.
If they want to take a hostage, so you're putting your fucking family kind of in super, high risk.
No, sure. High risk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I said, they thought it was inescapable.
True. Yeah.
Five wardens were there during the 29 years it was a prison, and the daughter of one of them wrote a book about the institution, and I saw her on every documentary I watched she was on. But she's very knowledgeable, of course, about the place. Now, Chris, the stuff that I read and watched mentioned inmates that did time that said it was a good prison for the food, but it was tough being isolated, especially if you got stuck in solitary.
Dude, some of that shit I saw about the solitary was terrible. Like,
yeah, complete naked, darkness.
Yeah, darkness, naked, no clothes.
Hole in the floor.
Yeah, like, fuck.
Yeah.
You gotta fuck the hole in the floor.
Yeah, you gotta fuck the hole in the floor.
That's the fucked up.
But they said the fucking food, because they were all on this island, so they all had to do everything.
Right.
They got like, I'm pretty sure I saw it said like they each got like three meals a day, but they were badass meals.
Right.
Like, fuck yeah.
So they had no canteen, so they weren't having issues with inmates stealing food from each other.
Right.
And
they
shit
just
like
got
that.
Awesome meals, and that's what they got.
Yeah.
But they were good meals.
Right. Right. Now, Joey, I read the book Alcatraz number 1259 by William Baker. That was the one I mentioned earlier. He was an inmate in the 50s and 60s there. He said that the one way they avoided problems was with the food. And I could see where that would be a big deal, because you don't have that canteen money and shit to fight over.
Yeah, and So what you're biting into a fucking huge part by not letting them have their own canteens or, you know, personal property and stuff like that, as far as like food and all that, is that's your prison economy. That's right. What those inmates are using to trade with each other, yep, to get other things to do that. So you're taking that away from them. So you're cutting into that real big time too. So all these guys that are fucking, probably a lot of them were involved in racketeering and gambling and, you know, anything that was going on back then. Gangster shit, really.
Yeah, a lot of them were bank robbers.
Right. So, you know, a lot of, I mean, yeah, you're cutting into a lot of fucking shiesty motherfuckers' way out of get shit. So it's just another way to control them a little bit better.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Like, okay, you guys ended up here. Watch how bad we're going to fuck you up. You
know? Right, right. Now, Tex, I know we live in a much different time 100 years ago when Alcatraz was open, but what sort of thing in things about how they treated the inmates has changed now? We talk about the whole, I'm sure nowadays there's limits of what you can do.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, that the being in your cell for 24 hours a day and all that and the solitary confinement, all that's changed. In Texas, at least, there is no solitary confinement anymore.
Oh, wow.
I mean, yes, they are. A lot of the all the ADSEG offenders, right, are single cell.
Okay.
But as far as having the double door and the light deprivation and all that crazy bullshit, no, yeah, that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's now, fucked up.
Yeah, I know sometimes correctional officers are seen as thugs, maybe, but there's no beatings anymore. I know they talked about beatings and stuff, right, during the documentaries. We've developed kind of a philosophy of reform, because, you know, like I said before, 97% of the inmates are going to be back out on the street.
Right.
And we have education programs, religious programs, all kinds of stuff to, you know, get them into activities.
Right. Get them back to normal society and shit. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Now the food. The food sucks.
Yeah, the last time I ate at a prison was about 10 years ago, and it was awful. I couldn't even eat it. It was inedible. It was really bad.
He said, though.
Starchy, too.
Food sucks.
So you better bring your lunch, right, Tex?
Yeah, you better bring your lunch.
That's why you got the commissary. That way you can make something good.
Right, exactly. Now, the cell house at Alcatraz was three stories divided into four cell blocks. The cells were very basic. They said they were 7 by 9 feet. The hallways were named, I thought this was interesting, after famous U.S. streets. Talk about making them remind them of their home, Broadway and Michigan Avenue. But D block was where the worst were kept. And William Baker talks about the conditions. I think he was in B or C, I can't recall. A lot of the book that he talks about, most of the guards were very cool. There, of course, were a few assholes, but you're going to have that in any fucking workplace.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where you're working.
Not just a prison.
Exactly.
But, you know, he said some of them were like that, but a majority of them were super cool. It's like they would figure, you know, let them do their time and I do my time, basically, as a employee working 20 years to retire. And just let me do my bit, you do yours, and, you know, they were cool.
We'll walk away awesome.
Yeah, exactly. There were six cells designated as the whole. There was a dining hall attached to the cell house, and both inmates and staff ate there three meals a day. And as we said, you know, it was supposed to be very good food, kind of unique.
I mean, it was like a self-sustaining own society, honestly.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it was pretty impressive how they did what they did. The hospital was located above the dining hall. So everything's in that one building. So if you do get to leave your cell, you're not going very far.
Right.
Unless you were working at the Model Industries building, where workers, you know, inmates that, you know, were able to work because they were, you know, doing well and not getting into trouble. And this is, of course, a privilege to actually get the fuck out of your damn cell and do something. They did a lot of sewing, woodwork, and William Baker, he said he made gloves while he was there. But they also did the laundry for the prison, which I think is pretty common. Now, Chris, you see in any documentary or movie about prisons that inmates are able to steal shit when they work somewhere, and then they're making shanks and doing shit like that.
Yeah, you got to have protection when you're in prison, and also you... that's just what you do. Like, figure out a way, how do I get this to my cell, basically? I need this for whatever reason.
Yes, Tex, is that still the case? I mean, do inmates, I mean, I'm sure they're going to get away with stuff and you guys find it, but how does that, you know, happen today?
Well, there, like Joey was saying, there's that prison economy. You've got tattoos, you've got drugs, you got prostitution, you got commissary, you name it, man. It's a microcosm of society.
Wow.
They're going to get away with stuff. What I always tell the convicts is, I know you're going to do stuff because convicts are going to convict. Don't do it in front of me because then you're disrespecting me.
Right.
If you can get away with it, get away with it.
And that's...
Yeah, they still do all that.
And that's, as being a officer, that's an awesome way to look at it, too. Like, you're not that asshole out there. Dude, like, don't fuck around. You know what I'm saying? So that's coming from...
No, you got to pick your battles, right, man. It's 100 to 80. I mean, 100 to 1 out there.
Right.
And I'm the one. I'm not going to...
Right.
Hell no.
Now, Joey, the one case that most people know about Alcatraz is, of course, the famous one made by Clint Eastwood in that movie Escape from Alcatraz. Right. Can you briefly explain? I mean, I know it's quite the story. We could really do a podcast just on that.
Right. Do a voice of dread on that.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
No, I'll kick the facts about that one. In 1962, you got Frank Morris, John Anglin, and Clarence Anglin, brothers, obviously. And they were all inmates at Alcatraz, all of them in for bank robbery, every one of them. So they sharpened spoons to bore through the prison walls, which is exactly what you were talking about, stealing them from the mess hall and using them as shank, or basically using them as fucking awls for the cement.
Right.
They left paper mache dummies in their beds.
That was clever.
I know, that was real hair too.
Yeah. They look so fucking shitty too.
Right.
But in the dark, you know, with a flashlight.
That's what I was saying, in the dark though, but when you actually see it,
they look pretty bad. Yeah.
So they bust out through this hole made by the fucking prison spoons, and they have a raft made of 50 raincoats. I mean, this is fucking innovation, and this is them using the only things that they can think of. So the case was open with the FBI until 1979 because they never showed up. So there was a lot of speculation if they had made it or if they didn't make it. It's the big fucking mystery now, you know?
Right.
And like I said, the case was open with the FBI until 1979. And then they concluded that the three were unlikely to have survived it.
There's so much differing opinions on this. I'm very fascinated
by it. And
there's
one
documentary I started to watch with the two uncle or nephews or whatever.
I watched that one where the guy said that he had the picture of the Anglin brothers and claimed they were in like Brazil or something and doing very well.
There were a couple somewhat credible claims, but every one of them FBI fucking straight shot down, said it's a hoax. And
there was the one guy with the deathbed confession that said he killed them with another person to steal their money. And that was fascinating. Yeah. And he said, like, where he put the bodies, there was like these horseshoes on the trees in a certain area so that they would know they were in the right place. And they went there and they found the indentation of a horseshoe in a tree and then nails on the other ones that made like a square around it.
Right.
And they were trying to get the permission. Pretty interesting shit,
right? Man.
So fascinating. That's cool. Yeah. So
no, I mean that was basically what happened. So that, they didn't get away with that. But something else I saw about that though, I guess I'll say it now. But supposedly CBS San Francisco. In 2018, they published an extract from a letter, supposedly from 2013, supposedly from John Anglin. And what the letter said, it said that he was 83 at the time and he was really bad off with cancer. He said he was the last one alive, the others passing in 2005 and 2008.
Wow.
And he offered a deal. He said if authorities announced on TV that he would only receive a one-year sentence – with the medical treatment that he needed,
right,
then he would write them back and tell them exactly where he was. So the FBI fucking shoots that down, and they're like, no, we don't fucking, you know, bullshit. Blah, blah, blah. So that nephew, he came back, David Widner, who the same guy you guys were talking about.
Right.
But, you know, he had said that that the FBI should have at least contacted the family about this letter that was supposedly, you know,
right,
the possibility, because they sent it for DNA and for fucking fingerprints. They didn't, it came back inconclusive.
Interesting.
But you know,
why wouldn't you come back to the family like, hey, can we check you guys' DNA, see if this is
exactly, like, I don't know. I thought that was pretty wild. And then the David Widmer dude, also something he said that I thought was creepy was he said that his grandma received roses after that break for years.
It was a funeral. They came into town for a funeral, and there were roses on the table. It's
fucking creepy shit.
It is creepy, man. It makes you wonder.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw this one that was pretty fascinating. These Dutch scientists tried to recreate the escape that they made, and they did it the same time of year, so the weather conditions, they were able to figure out what they were on that night. And they did it at the same time of the day, the you know, same conditions, as close as they could do it. They were able to build the raft from the raincoats, but they couldn't find the same raincoats. But they believed, based on experts, that they got the same thickness material, as close as you could do.
Modern, but as close as nothing.
Yeah, and they needed like 50 or 60 of these things to build it. But they used the same glue. They were able to find that glue they used, because they had that one part that washed up on the shore. They had evidence of some of this stuff.
Right.
And they used like an accordion to inflate it, which is pretty clever. So they hooked up an accordion and they, you know, used it to, you know, put air in the damn thing. And so they were pretty shrewd how they did this. And I had saw something that the Anglin brothers grew up in Tampa and were like really good swimmers. And so that's why the case of this guy thinks they got away was these two were really good swimmers.
Swimming from them gators. They've been out
swimming
there.
From since they were little kids.
From Tampa, they swim from gators. Yeah. Like,
and they were used to the currents and the temper, you know, like maybe not the temperature in Florida, but nonetheless, that, you know, the felt very confident that, I mean, and there are people that swim that.
Hell yeah.
That, you know, are able to do it. But of course, when you're, you know, been it locked up in a cell for 24/7, and then all of a sudden you're swimming across a fucking treacherous piece of water. I mean, that's a whole different ballgame.
They kept the water warm on purpose in the prison,
right?
So they couldn't acclimate to cold water,
which is smart. Right. But then I saw something else that debunked that, so I don't know. Oh. You know, that's why I said with this stuff, you hear both sides of it, and these Dutch scientists, they were able to recreate it. They got almost to the whatever that island was, the Angel Island or whatever, that they would have been the smartest way for them to go. They came close, but the currents pushed them out toward the bridge, and they said if they got on the other side of the bridge, you're done. Like, you're going to die. So they were like, because the thing would deflate.
So because they had to pump it back up.
So they had to have two pumping the raft up, and the other with the oar.
Right.
And so if they said that if they had two people rowing, they would have made it. But the way they were doing it to keep up with the thing not just completely falling apart, they had to be constantly working this fucking bellows to blow this thing up.
I mean, it makes sense. It's not going to be super airtight.
No,
you just made,
but
this,
I mean, how fucking, I
shit.
Mean, we always talk about these convicts being so fucking smart. I mean, Tex, we've had that conversation. These motherfuckers, it's like, if you use this in a good way, what could you do with your life instead of doing some stupid shit, you know?
They probably learned.
Yeah, Frank Morris had an IQ of 138. Oh, I mean, he was pretty close to being a genius.
Yeah, that's true. I knew he was smart. And West was the guy they believe actually was the mastermind of the whole thing. But some say he couldn't get out of his cell. The hole wasn't big enough. And then there were some people that claim, and I think it was one of the inmates that I watched that said, no, he got cold feet. He didn't want to go. He said he was afraid of the water.
Yeah.
he was afraid he wouldn't make it. He thought it was a suicide mission. So he planned it and talked all this big game. But when it came right down to it, he chickened out. Who knows, though? Again, you hear both sides of that, you know. Just fascinating.
Yeah, at least he wasn't no snitch.
Right. That's right. Snitch. Hell yeah. There were a lot of people involved. We're going to get to a couple of the characters that we're going to talk about that were actually part of this, too. So very, very interesting stuff I watched. You know, most think that they drowned or were taken to sea and eaten up by some sharks, Joey. I know that's your... That's your jam. Next Shark Week, you know we're going to do a podcast.
That's
my jam, and
that's fucking ideal spot where sharks have always been, and the big ones. So, yeah.
Not good. And there are people, like we said, you know, think the Anglins made it, and I don't hear much about, what's his name?
Morris.
Morris. Frank Morris. I don't hear much about him, but the Anglins came up a lot in the ones that believe that they're still out there, or were at least out there. They're pretty old at this point, of course. You know, the picture that I saw that guy said that was his relation, you know, you could kind of see it. He talked about the one had the scar on his cheek, which one of the brothers did.
Right.
They had beards and obviously much older in the picture. But, it's just this stuff fascinates me. It really does. Just the whole intrigue and you don't really know and you hear different things to me that just adds layers to these interesting stories we talk about. And the one with the deathbed confession was very cool. I can't remember the name of it now, but there's a nurse that had a patient that claimed he was part of the scheme to get him out. Him and another guy were in a boat out in the bay at midnight was where they were told, and a spot that they thought that they would make it to in that time. We give them, 2 hours? Because or 10:30 was when they made the noise to get on the roof. Mm-hmm. I think it was 10:30. So an hour and a half, maybe they figured it would take them to get to this boat. And they made it to according to this guy, they made it to the boat. He took them to shore. They were put in the back of a truck and taken to his uncle's house, who lived in Seattle, and he was supposed to be like the money guy that the family sent him the money, and he was supposed to give them their share. He was going to get a little piece give them theirs, and it was like 40 grand.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the fucking 60s. I mean, that's a lot of fucking money anyway, but, you know, back then, even that much more.
I saw some other thing that correlates with that. I can't remember the exact fucking... article or whatnot, but it was somebody who supposedly witnessed a boat out there in the fucking in the bay without the lights on and fucking just out there supposedly in that spot where they would have been. It was a pretty nice, I guess it was like a yacht almost, and fucking took off.
This was not a yacht, but it was a decent boat, but I mean
maybe it wasn't a yacht, it was something, but
they were that's what this guy claimed, deathbed confession. He just wanted to clear his conscience because it really bothered him, because what happened was the uncle arranged for him and the other guy that picked him up to take them out to the country and shoot him and bury him in this hole they already dug. And that's what he claimed happened. And they took the money and that was it. They shot him. Him and the other guy had 38s and they shot him. And again, that's what they claim. It's just very, very fascinating. But what do you think, Tex? I mean, do you think these guys got away?
Yeah, man, I'm pretty sure they did. The Anglin family's pretty adamant. They have letters, postcards. They have that photo that you were talking about. I'm pretty sure they made it. You know, I would like to think they made it because it's romantic. You know what I mean? It's the story of Alcatraz. Right.
Yeah, I agree. It's such a cool story. It's like you just want it to stay in uncertain, you know? Like, if it was solved, it would almost ruin it. You know what I mean? I agree. It's got a mystique to it, you know? Now, Alcatraz closed a year later in 1963. I'm sure they got a lot of bad publicity from that. During its 29 years in operation as a federal prison, there were 34 inmates that tried to escape in 14 different attempts. Two men tried twice. Getting caught would have put you in the fucking hole forever, so that wouldn't have been good. 23 of them were caught. 6 were caught during the attempt, shot and killed. 2 drowned, and 5 are missing and officially considered that, you know, they did make it. They drowned in the attempt. I know with the Anglin brothers and Morris, they found pieces of the raft.
Right.
And so that's how they kind of say, no, they got, you know, tore up in the current.
Right.
They drowned. Brutal. But they never found bodies, though.
The water's so cold that you get fucking hypothermia in 30 minutes. You got to swim fucking a mile and...
Yeah, a mile and a quarter. Yeah. Chris, there was that one prisoner that got out and swam the whole thing.
He made it to shore. But poor bastard. He was so fucking cold.
Oh, wrong way, Charles.
Wrong way. No. That's not him. That's the dude in the military outfit. No, this is the dude that was up on shore, got all cold, like hypothermia for real.
Yeah, he's like paralyzed.
Walking. Yeah, this kid comes running down, sees him on the beach. He's like, oh, this guy needs help, and goes and gets a cop. Like, motherfucker made it from the island to shore, and the first person he sees...
Cop sees him in his prison duds, all frozen shit. Like, yep, we got him. I'm sure they had already called the fucking cops.
So that sucks.
Yeah, now Joey...
That's who Tex was talking about.
Yeah, this is
who
Tex was
talking about.
This is who Tex was,
the stole a piece of the army uniform.
Yeah, piece by piece.
That was crazy.
It took him how long?
Years, they said.
I don't remember exactly how long. Yeah, it was a long time, but he stole piece by piece the whole fucking outfit for an army uniform so that he could sneak onto one of the boats that was leaving the island.
Right.
And he did. He made it onto the boat, but by that time, they already knew that he was missing, A, from the penitentiary.
Right.
And then, B, they're like, okay, well, then he's probably on. So they, I don't know if like somebody recognized him or what, but by the time they were coming to shore, they were there to fucking pick him up.
Because they were going to a different island, not going to the fucking...
Oh, right.
Going to San Francisco. Like, oh, where thought they were going. They were going somewhere else. That's why they called him Wrong Way...
that's funny.
Wrong Way Giles.
Because he went the fucking wrong way. It's like, you just went back to
you
the...
You took the wrong boat, dude.
Yeah, they were standing there waiting for him with handcuffs.
That was his new nickname at Alcatraz from that day forward.
Oh, you know it.
Yeah.
You know it. Now, Tex, how rare are escape attempts in modern prison time?
Man, we've talked about a few,
right?
You know, on the podcast, but I wouldn't say they're rare, but they're uncommon.
Yeah,
it takes a lot of planning and stuff. I'm sure there are a lot of attempts, but none that are
successful.
They get
out
or even execute the plan.
Yeah, and you guys train relentlessly on that kind of stuff, so it's a fucking serious matter. You guys know what you're doing. I mean, not to besmirch these guards at this time, but it's a different world. People are trained better. There's a different mentality, a different caliber of people doing the job. Not to again say these guys were terrible, but they're like with any place, you had some bad apples, and one of those, the one with the deathbed confession, he claimed there were multiple guards on the take, and they were paid to fucking turn the other cheek that night, because these fucking guys got out, crawled down that drain pipe, and made it to the shore with this fucking raft. I mean, I can't imagine they weren't fucking seen, you know? So you almost would have to think that something like that may have happened,
Right.
So it's very, very interesting. The one that I saw that was absolutely insane, I'd never heard of before, was the Battle of Alcatraz. That's what it was called in 1946.
Alcatraz blast out.
So like 25 years, before the one that everybody knows, this escape, Battle of Alcatraz, 6 inmates. Bernard Coy was the brains of it. He starved himself for weeks to slim down where he could spread the bars of the weapons room with parts he made from a toilet and squeezed in. Chris, what the fuck, man?
That's fucking
That's
ingenuity.
Dedication. Yeah. Starved himself to fit through the bars. Another inmate helped him overpower the guards. I'm surprised he could.
Dude, I'm surprised he could fucking try to fight anybody, dude.
Been eating, gets in the weapons room and starts eating Pop-Tarts or something to fucking get some energy going. The other inmate, though, helps him. They take control of the cell house. They let the others out. they demanded the keys to the rec yard. Now, this was clever. There was a guard that gave him the keys but was smart and kept the key that would lead to the outside gate so they wouldn't be able to get out of the yard. That I'm hoping that guy got like all sorts of
commendations
because that's fucking impressive. They helped.
He got to keep
it. I'm sure.
He got to keep his job.
Like get second helpings of the dessert
pizza party
for a
on
month
bread.
At the cafeteria. Yeah. They held two guards hostage and killed one of them. 17 of the guards and one inmate were injured. Three of the inmates gave up and went to their cells, but the other three decided to stay and fight it out. They bring in the fucking Marines, and after 48 hours, they wind up killing the three, and the Marines, you know, take control of it. Two of the three who gave up were sentenced to death in the gas chamber. I thought this was brutal. Gassed together in the chamber at the same time.
That's fucking weird.
That's fucked up. Yeah, that's brutal. And the third was only 19, and he was given another life sentence. So they spared the one, but the other two were gassed together. That's fucked up. Oddly, Robert Stroud, the infamous Birdman of Alcatraz, Chris, you just talked about him, was the one that actually helped stop the violence and made the inmates give up. But they wound up getting shot anyway. Chris, I never heard of this one. I mean, this is fucking crazy, man.
I honestly didn't hear about it either. The blast out's crazy. It sounds like a fucking terrible porno.
It does.
Like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, these guys are just fucking nuts. But hey, they got nothing to lose, man. Like,
yeah, they
like
don't give a
Tech
shit,
but... said, you know, they're at the fucking last stop, man. This is where it ends, you know. So you don't have anything to, you know, what the fuck? I mean, Joey, we talked about Robert Stroud, the Birdman. Very, very interesting story. We're definitely going to do one eventually on him.
Right.
I have a book about him that I've been meaning to read. It's on my list. But many of our listeners might be surprised that he had no birds while he was on Devil's Island. What's the deal with that?
No, when he was in Leavenworth Penitentiary,
right,
he reared and sold birds, and like he became an ornithologist, and he wasn't just like. Like, people fucking paid attention to him, and they fucking appreciated him as an ornithologist, like, for real, even though he did it in prison, you know? But whenever he went to Alcatraz, they had regulations that you couldn't keep birds there. So right. He wasn't allowed to actually have the birds. So he didn't have birds while he was there, but he was the Birdman, and the name obviously followed him.
Right.
And the Birdman in Alcatraz just sounds like a fucking name.
It does, and there's a movie about that. Yeah. You know, that's a cool story.
And it's funny, though, because like you said, most of the time, I mean, I wouldn't have known this until we looked into it. I didn't know that he didn't actually have birds there. I figured he fucking did.
Sure.
And Alcatraz, like we were saying it's constantly covered by fucking seagulls.
That had
to fucking
torment him, man. All those birds, but he can't have one. Yeah. You know, that's fucked up because he wrote books about them.
Right.
Yeah.
About birds and shit. I mean, pretty respected fucking guy in that field. I mean, that's fucking crazy. Very infamous, though, with him. And certainly we could do a podcast just about him and probably eventually will. And you mentioned Leavenworth.
Yep.
I'm going to throw that one in the ring as a good one to do. I have a book on it called The Hot House. That's where I actually learned about Carl Panzram,
because
he was executed there and spit in the fucking priest's face and all that fucked up shit. So that would be a very badass episode to do. Tex, of course, we'll have to have you on for that. But that's just as you were talking about it, I thought that'd be a badass one to do too. I also mentioned William Baker, and he wasn't a famous inmate or anything, but he was one of the few survivors. And he wrote that book, and he does all the tours and stuff, and he speaks and everything there. At least he did. I did run across a buddy of Machine Gun Kelly, who was in Alcatraz, inmate number 666.
I saw him on that one documentary. I was like,
wow,
this dude's fucking inmate 666.
Right?
He's the best.
William Radke. He was a gangster, and he said he claimed he still had six slugs in his ass from not stopping when the police told him to halt. So he's a hard ass, but talked a big fucking game.
It's full of lead. Of course he's a hard ass.
Oh, for sure, right? And, you know, of course, everybody knows about Al Capone being there, Machine Gun Kelly, Robert Stroud, as we said. You know, there's quite a few names there. Other notables was Whitey Bulger, who we're going to be doing actually here in a couple weeks. The infamous gangster and killer, Mickey Cohen, a mafia kingpin, Arthur Baker, son of Ma Barker, or sorry, Arthur Barker, son of Ma Barker, that whole gang. That would be another good one to do.
Yeah, yeah.
He was shot and killed during an escape attempt. And I love this, Alvin Creepy Karpis. That's his nickname, Creepy. Also part of that Ma Barker gang. He's, of course, would be a good one even to do. And then Bumpy Johnson, that's a good nickname, a black gangster known as the King of Harlem. And he also was supposed to be in on that escape attempt. I think maybe from, you know, he wasn't going to go. I think he was just part of the plan. I don't know a lot about it, but he was mentioned in those conversations. Right. There were a bunch of bank robbers there and inmates that had escaped from other prisons. And then after Alcatraz closed, the federal prison in Marion, Illinois, which was interesting because that's not far from us. About 3 hours south is Marion. There's a big VA hospital there, too. But anyway, that's where now they send those bad inmates in the federal system.
We get Alcatraz sent to Illinois.
Yeah, and it's not as scary. It's more modern looking, so it doesn't look like Pontiac, the old, you know, Joliet's like that, too. Fucking really creepy, gothic-looking prison. Now, Tex, I did see some stuff about some Native Americans who got fired up and occupied the island for a while after the prison closed, claiming it was their ancestors and all this. Did you see anything about that?
Yeah, man, I watched several documentaries about it, and I got kind of a little blurb I going to read it. You know, Alcatraz was closed in 1963. Right. Native American protesters argued that meant that the island was theirs, according to the Treaty of Fort Laramie. That treaty said that any land that was abandoned by the federal government had to be returned to the natives who once occupied it.
All right.
Interesting.
So they tried, the Native Americans tried that way, like in 1964, but it didn't work. It got shot down. So the catalyst of the occupation, where they went over there and 89 Native Americans occupied the island. The catalyst for that was their organizational headquarters for the Indians of all tribes burned down in a big fire in San Francisco. So they were like, "Well, our shit burned down. We're gonna go take Alcatraz." So that's what they did, and they occupied the island. At first, it was like 89 of them, and then at the height of the occupation, there were over 400.
Right, they just take it over the land
Indians
again.
Living there. Just,
like,
yeah,
that's interesting. I didn't see a lot on it, so that's I maybe have to dig a little deeper to check that out because that is a fascinating thing. I never knew anything about that. The Native Americans were, and that went on for a while, didn't it, Tex?
Yeah, it lasted until June of 1971, so a total of 19 months. So how it ended was they cut all the utilities. They cut the water at first, then they cut the power.
On some dickhead shit.
And then after that, everybody's like, okay, you win. And then they left. There's about 15 left. And so Tricky Dick Nixon sent in U.S. Marshals and forcibly removed the last 15.
So interesting. It, thanks for that bit of info, man. We're learning shit all the time. Pretty good stuff. Now the prison is a tourist attraction. There aren't too many former inmates that are still alive or any staff. But the few that are, you watch some interesting interviews with some of them, pretty colorful characters.
Yeah.
Like Mr. 666 himself. Sounded like a pretty interesting dude. I think he's gone now. William Baker was doing the tours there. Like I said, I'm not sure if he still does, but the book that I bought was actually signed by him. And so that's really cool, little keepsake. Yeah. But yeah, I really wanted to read something totally different, not the typical thing that you would find. And it was just written in very plain English, but he did a good job. And he talks about, you know, some of the people he met there and what he did and how he survived
it.
You know,
living in Alcatraz.
Yeah, because, you know, he got out, you know, maybe 20 years before that. He said he totally turned his shit around. He married a good woman and he was living, you know, doing really well for himself and doing right these on. Tours and making some money with the book. So you got to, you know, hey, he did his time and yeah. and he's doing, you know, was doing good. I think he's still alive. So very, very cool stuff. Guys, anything you want to add to this conversation?
I don't think I need to,
Tex? Yeah, cool. Well, really I think we did a good job with this one. Yeah. Very. I always like it that we talk about more than just, you know, one source. Yeah. We're getting them from multiple things. Jenny and I were watching something. It was so bad. This documentary on Jane
yeah.
Taupin,
yeah.
who's on our radar.
yeah.
And there's some terrible shit out there. But there was one girl or woman on a podcast reading. You could tell she was reading.
Just reading it.
We pulled up the Wikipedia mm-hmm. page, and literally she was reading the Wikipedia. Because Jenny was like a sentence ahead yeah. of her reading it out loud. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, put some fucking work in. I mean, that is the laziest fucking yeah. shit. And there's so much of that out there. And I always try to, I mean, yeah. we only have a week, you know, these come up quickly. To keep that pace is challenging, to be able to watch and listen and read as much as possible. And certain topics I do more with, and I spent some time with this one. I'm glad we did. It was a good one. I've been anxious to get to it. So I think we did a good job. There's a lot out there. YouTube is a great source for a lot of this stuff. Really good, you know, different documentaries, the ones we talked about. There's so much out there, and now we're talking about the Native American issue there, which, as Tex said, there's stuff specifically on right. that. So very, very, you know, yeah. interesting story, because there's so many sides to it. You know, the romanticism of the guys that got away, did they, didn't they? The island, it's very ominous, but it's so close, but so far away. And, you know, the right. bay gets foggy. I mean, there's all these, like, for a writer, you know, my mind is going with all these cool images, you know what I mean?
Right?
So
yeah.
That's why
I did
so
all
much.
My research watching The Rock with Nicolas Cage. That's the
there you go.
All my research right there.
Well, that's putting in some good work. Now, next week, we're going to do another one I spent a crazy amount of time with, The Clutter Murders.
Hell yeah.
Definitely an icon in the true crime world, a family of five slain brutally in Kansas in 1959, which, you know, you don't think of that kind of stuff happening back then, was featured in the Truman Capote true crime classic In Cold Blood. It's a very fascinating case, and Capote's book is considered the first true crime novel, but a lot of people didn't like it. A lot of people thought he made shit up. And like with all these stories we do, it's not like we're sitting here saying that this is the gospel.
Right.
Because there are people that don't agree with it. A lot of the Clutter families, like, they made the mother seem more sickly than they said she was and blah. We're going to get into it. It's a cool story.
That's what's going to be interesting, too, is I read the book so fucking long ago.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, an original. But now, and especially nowadays with all the fucking the computer access at your hands and everything,
right,
to actually look into the case like we look into the other cases and learn about it that way,
right,
that's going to be way more interesting than just taking it as I read
taking
it through
that book. And that's
sure
like in cold Pete blood. Said, that's not necessarily the gospel,
right?
Yeah, because he's got dialogue in there, and right. obviously he doesn't know what they said, but, you know, he yeah. recreates it. And he even said yeah. himself, it wasn't a true crime book. It was a true crime novel.
Right.
And that's what really started that whole thing.
Right. I was
so going to
say, regardless,
cool.
super ahead of its time. So
very. And it ruined him, which is interesting.
Right, yeah.
We'll talk about yeah. it. It's a good story. Sad, but an interesting story. And I read the same thing. I read In Cold Blood a couple of months ago and watched quite a bit on it. And so a really, really good one.
Hell yeah.
Joey, you got any good page a day calendar stuff for us?
You know, we've been out of the studio for a little while, so there was actually quite a bit to pick from.
Right.
But I settled on two.
Cool.
And the two that I settled on, one's for Chris and one's for Pete.
Oh, damn. Nice.
So
I want to guess which one the first one is. I'm not going to guess.
Oh, no, it's for you.
Oh, okay.
This first one's for
one
you,
is
Chris.
For Chris. All right.
Now, this is the story. Now, these broads are identical
God
twins.
Damn it.
Alexandria and Anastasia Duval. They're identical twins, and they own a popular yoga studio in Palm Beach, Florida from 2008 to 2014.
Okay.
Now, they had this crazy ass relationship. They were super close with each other, but they were super well known for their violent outbursts towards each other, especially when they were drinking.
Oh, damn.
Were once driving down the expressway with Anastasia's boyfriend. He was driving, and all of a sudden, they start throwing a temper tantrum because he refuses to stop so they can get another glass of wine. The boyfriend reported that the two nearly drove him off the road. So all of a sudden, they abruptly they closed their yoga studio and they moved to Park City, Utah. So they moved from fucking Florida to Park City, Utah, where they are arrested for public intoxication, fleeing the scene of an accident, driving under the influence, and assaulting an officer.
Dude, you know who's in Park City, Utah, I think? Was Teresa Knorr. I'm pretty sure that was the town. That's fucked up.
In one instance, while they were in Park City, the two were ejected from a restaurant after drinking too much, only to be found in their car in a ditch arguing and pulling each other's hair.
Nice.
So then they moved from Park City, Utah to Maui in Hawaii.
Oh.
And then their violence turns a little bit more.
Oh,
so,
shit.
So Alexander and Anastasia, they moved to Maui in December of 2015. So in early June of the following year, they're planning a camping trip. Anastasia is with her boyfriend. And Alexandria decides she's going to come along regardless. So Anastasia, she's a little bit not too happy with the fact that there's this extra company. And her sister begin fighting after a few drinks.
Oh, no.
So the two drove off in their Ford Explorer arguing while Anastasia's boyfriend's in the bathroom. So they're driving down Maui's scenic Hana Highway. And witnesses saw Alexandria in the driver's seat and reported the two were hitting each other, pulling each other's hair, screaming. And as they're struggling, Alexandria makes a sharp left turn and drove off a 200-foot cliff.
Oh, my God.
She survived with minor injuries, but her sister was killed.
Oh, my God.
Jesus Christ.
So Alexandria, she's arrested in June 3rd of 2016 and charged with second-degree murder. But she was released on June 8th, and all charges were dropped.
Oh, my God.
They brought the case to a grand jury, they said, but they just, I don't know why, didn't prosecute it. So while they're gathering evidence in the case, she goes back to upstate New York, where she's arrested on August 15th for drunk driving. Alcohol levels 3 times the legal limit.
Shawback Nation.
So Albany, New York, in 2016, November 11th, she's rearrested for second degree murder on the case, extradited to Hawaii. Her defense is arguing that the crash is an accident, and their key piece of evidence is the fact that the dead woman has, you know, Alexandria's hair in her hand. The corpse still did from pulling her hair.
Oh, fuck.
And, you know, suggesting she yanked it out hard enough, maybe causing her to lose control. So Alexandria was found not guilty on February 1st, 2018, and continues to live.
Wow.
So, no shit.
Damn. That's a good one.
So that one was for Shaw, man. Oh, no. That was his dream girls right there.
I have no idea what the fuck this is about.
And this one I'm going to do for Pete. And the only reason I'm doing this one for you is because it's an East Coast one. And
oh, nice.
But this is a really good case, too. And again, these are the page a day. Thank you very much. I only did these two because we got things to do. But anyway, so this other one I'm doing, this is talking about Winston Mosley. So, on March 13th, 1964, Winston Mosley attacked Kitty Genovese outside her Queens apartment.
I know this story.
Yeah, everybody knows this story. It's over a half hour consisting of 3 attacks. This dude would attack her, and then like he would see some lights come on and like duck off. And he came back and got her again. I mean, he raped her and killed her. So there was an estimated 38 people watching this, and no one calls authorities. They're like watching from their fucking apartments. Yeah,
see it happening.
So he had also killed a 15-year-old, stabbed a housewife who was shot and then burned to death 2 weeks before the Kitty Genovese attack. Jesus. So he was violent. Suspect or a criminal. So he attacked this lady, and all this shit happened. Now, it's funny because the 15-year-old girl that he killed, there was a 10-year-old boy named Alvin Mitchell who was charged with her death. And, like, he was going through the process of getting in trouble for this. And in his trial, even Mosley was like, no, I did that. You know what I'm saying? And eventually ended up cutting it off, and you know,
right,
the boy was released. But Mosley, he was a necrophiliac, and so after he's arrested for this, you know what I'm saying, he's in prison. In 1968, he goes to the hospital for surgery in Buffalo, New York, because he put a soup can in his own rectum.
Yeah.
So while he's there, while he's there, he overpowers a guard, grabs a bat, swings it at the closest person to him. He took five hostages, got a gun. He raped one of the hostages before he's recaptured two days later.
Can in his ass?
Right. I don't know.
Damn, how the hell you doing all this without a can up here?
But he
wow.
And Mosley, he also participated in the Attica riots too.
Oh damn.
But anyway, so this whole thing comes busting out about this fucking story, and the New York Times, like, one of the fucking main headlines was 38 witnesses don't help.
Wow.
I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was like something where everybody was like, what the fuck? And it started like this whole thing. Like, they interviewed people, and there were people that were like, I was tired, I just want to go back to bed. I didn't want to get involved with it.
Right.
She's, dude, if you look up pictures of her, she was like young, damn, beautiful bartender.
Yeah.
Like, everybody loved her. If you hear the story about Kenny Genevieve,
that's horrible.
No, it's fucking
But like retarded. Nobody called, because, and this is, they did studies on this, and they were like, the more people that are like, this is before cell phones shit, of course, the more people that are likely to witness a crime, the less chance of it getting reported quickly, because everybody thinks the other person's going to do it.
Oh, okay.
So they don't take the responsibility of doing that. And that's what all these people are saying is like, A, I didn't want to deal with it. B, I was tired. C, I didn't think it was, you know.
I thought somebody else was going to take it. But
it was a big fucking deal, because with the headline from the Times and all this shit, there was a stigma that was being looked at in by the Midwest, basically, towards these cities, the urban cities. And they're like, that's your empathy show. And that's what cities create, is people that don't give a fuck if somebody's killed right in front of you.
Right.
And this is also the case that basically made 911 a thing, because after this they're like, oh well, nobody could act, because back then it would be like, man, you would call and you'd be lucky if you could get a hold of somebody,
sure,
if they would take you seriously, anything like that. So after this, when everybody could have called and saved this girl who was being attacked over and over again, 911 became implemented. Mosley, man, Winston Mosley,
yeah, that would be a good one too, man, with tons of stuff. Page a day.
So that was amazing. Page a day.
All right, well, Tex, thank you for coming in with us tonight. I hope you had fun talking some Alcatraz with us.
Oh, yeah, man. It was a blast.
Awesome.
Anytime.
Awesome.
Hearing from you, man.
And we've done our fair share of murder tonight, so I hear that familiar music. It's got to be CK getting ready to come in here and talk some metal with us. So, Tex, what the fuck do we need to do?
Let's get our metal on.
Know the world over as the master of metal, the crusher of posers, and Murder Metal Mayhem's knower of all things metal, hailing from Wild Man Street in Danbury, Connecticut, standing at 6 feet of brutal, punishing madness, weighing in at 220 pounds of poser pulverization, the one, the only, toughest bastard on the planet, Chris C.K. Kovacs!
Hell yeah, man. C.K., what's up, dude?
What's up?
What's going on, homie? How you feeling?
Little, you know, got some news that I wasn't glad to hear, but
right.
I'm feeling okay so far, so.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good, dude. I know you're a fucking trooper, man. The fans and listeners are always all about CK and how you're doing and stuff like that, and so everybody's obviously pulling for you to keep being the great metal motherfucker that you are.
And I appreciate it, and if nobody knows what I'm talking about, excuse me, I just had a sandwich. I found out recently that the chemo, the chemo that I'm on, or was on, which was the last treatment that's available as of now.
Right.
Isn't working, so right now my All we're doing is waiting and seeing if there's anything coming up. That's it.
Keeping your pain straight.
Yep. You know, making sure.
Well, you know everybody's out here cheering for you, bro.
Yeah, fuck yeah, yeah, dude. They're coming up with shit all the time. There's some smart motherfuckers out there, so.
You know, and wanted to send my condolences to Chris's family. I know you had a loss.
Right on. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
I know it's tough when you lose somebody like that. So just want to let you know my thoughts are with your family.
Hell yeah. Thank you, dude.
Fuck yeah,
appreciate
dude.
Appreciate it.
Well, CK, like I said, always want to hear good news when it comes to anything like that. But I'm going to remain hopeful, like I know you are, that they're going to come up with something to fix you. So you're too brutal,
no,
man.
I'm always positive.
Hell, so you are, dude. You are, man. And because you're positive, I know you just want to keep fucking talking some metal.
But you know what? I'm gonna pause you for a minute.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I'm gonna switch gears real fast. Now, CK, you haven't heard the podcast up to this point as we record this, so you haven't heard our Alcatraz, and you didn't hear my page of days this time.
Right.
No. But you will.
Yeah.
But I was thinking this is for the listeners that have been listening. When I was doing the one about the two girls, Anastasia twins, and Alexandra, yeah, right. I was like, there was a quote that I had missed. So I went in the trash and I dug this out. Now, CK, this will give you a little bit of hype so you can get excited about the page of day,
cool.
the real story. And for Chris and Pete, you guys didn't hear this yet, but this was one of the boyfriends. This was one of his statements he made about them, and this is what I thought was
like
so
a straight up quote. About
oh yeah, this
how
is Shawback Nation. But he so he says this, and this is, you know, for the listeners. If you heard my page today about the two crazy twin sisters, CK, you're gonna have to hear because it's fucking
yeah,
hilarious.
It's fucking crazy.
Anyway, so the boyfriend says, I get to their apartment and there's broken glass everywhere from wine bottles and shattered glasses. There Jesus. Was blood everywhere and the bedroom door was falling off its hinges. Both of them were sitting on the couch when I walked in. They were like, hey, how are you doing? Alexandria had a bruise on her face. I asked them if they were okay and they were like, oh, we're good. We're fine. We're just watching a movie. Meanwhile, all around them, it's total destruction. They seemed not to know that they wanted to kill each other just minutes earlier.
Wow.
Yeah. Fuck
yeah, that's
yeah. You have
up.
To hear that one, CK.
That
it
is
pretty funny.
It's a good one, CK.
You can't make that shit up.
You can't. No. You really can't.
So I had to break so into metal for a moment to bring that
no,
up.
Dude, that was worth it. That was worth it. Now, CK, you picked the band tonight. It makes good sense, but of course, Great Metal Motherfucker has decided on what band to cover tonight.
Attica, of course.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Attica, of course.
Attica.
No. said Leavenworth. Attica, of course. No.
The band Alcatraz.
Fuck yeah. With a double Z at the end, not the single yes. Z in the prison, which is interesting.
Yes. And originally they were formed by Graham Bonnet in 1983. And they were really known for the first album, No Parole for Rock and Roll, because they were able
no
to get...
No Parole for Rock and Roll.
Right?
That's
like the best
title
ever.
That's very metal.
They were best known because they were able to recruit Yngwie Malmsteen.
Right.
Now, let it be known at this time, there was another frontman who was also looking to recruit Yngwie, and that was Ronnie James Dio.
Oh, wow. But, that would have been crazy.
But Graham Bonnet was able to get him first. So be it. The first lineup of... Well, one of the lineups was... had Clive Burr from formerly
Iron
Maiden.
Maiden. Oh, wow.
He was the original drummer.
Oh, shit. That's
but,
cool.
I guess he had issues, so he left, and the original didn't really have too many
lineup changes.
Past members, yeah.
That's cool.
Tell you the truth.
Huh.
I mean, the lineup now is pretty much close to what it was when it formed, minus maybe two members. But the first album had Yngwie, and before that, Yngwie was in Steeler with Ron Keel.
Oh, now, Jesus.
I knew you would love that.
Oh, Ronnie Lee.
But thankfully, Yngwie went and joined Steeler. Yeah, okay. Alcatraz, they recorded No Parole for Rock and Roll. A great album. Kind of landing on that, on the fence between metal and hard rock.
Yeah, kind of cheesy.
Yeah, but great songs. I mean,
fits the time though. I mean, it was the thing.
Exactly,
you know? It's cool.
Right, for sure. No, I love exactly. that.
Watching title. Some of the videos though, I was like, God, this is really cheesy. But you know, that was the time, and obviously, videos aren't what they are today. And it's,
you know, and that was
hard,
you know,
to look at it sometimes. That
right,
way.
Right.
They sounded like Rainbow because obviously Graham Bonnet came from Rainbow.
Right.
Who
was the bass player?
The bass player was. Give me 1 second. We go into my metal files.
I didn't come across a name I recognized, at least that I can think.
The original? The original was...
It wasn't me, I know that.
Not that I know of.
No.
I think he's still in the band. Hold on.
Damn, bass God player damn it, getting CK. No love. Worried about the damn drummers and the guitar players.
Gary Shea.
Okay, yeah, I'm not familiar.
And he's been around for in a couple of bands here and there. Now, what gets even more messed up is Malmsteen leaves because, you know, Malmsteen has a big head and he decided that,
right,
you know, he had to do his own thing and have his own solo project, and, you know, it is what it is.
Right.
So, he went and, Graham Bonnet went and recruited, one of the greatest guitarists in our time that I know of.
Steve Vai.
Oh, yeah. Jesus, and yeah.
And he recorded it, which is the album I love. They recorded,
Born in
Disturbing, a, Disturbing the Peace.
Disturbing the Peace, yeah.
Which really kicks ass. And what I like about Vai was always a team player. He was never, right. You know, I'm above you guys, I'm above all that.
Yeah, it seemed like a more down-to-earth kind of guy than yeah, fucking
that was,
Yngwie.
That
was
wasn't
just
his
a douchebag.
Scene.
Right, right. He's like, I can play guitar, but I'm not an asshole yeah. about it.
Right. But, yeah, he's badass, man.
You know, but David Lee Roth obviously left Van Halen, and his first choice of guitarist was Stevie Vai. So obviously right. Stevie Vai is going to go with this a little bit more money.
Right.
Because, you know, Alcatraz, David Lee Roth, who are you going to...
Yeah, I'm for sure. Going. David Lee
Roth
was huge at the time.
The whole time. Yeah, like he's doing.
You know,
yeah,
so, coming off of Van Halen, that's yeah. serious shit.
You know, so obviously he's going to go with Van Halen,
right?
And they came up with guitarist I never heard of, Danny Johnson.
He's got a good fucking nose for wicked guitar players, though, between Yngwie and Vai. That's
oh,
pretty
yeah.
impressive, man. Damn.
And they recorded Dangerous Games in 86. So they had a run from 83 to 86 of albums pretty much nonstop. So if one member left, he already had somebody in the wings to come and replace him.
Right.
That was it for a while. They pretty much went on hiatus, disbanded, whatever. And recently, last year, they recorded an album called... Hold on.
Wasn't Fire in the Brain,
Wait
was
for it?
It?
No, God, no. He said, kill myself.
Fire in the Brain, driving me insane.
God,
fire in the brain.
God, that's horrendous.
Oz. Fire in the brain.
They fucking suck.
I just saw something about Danny Johnson, and I didn't realize he was founded by Rick Derringer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Sick.
I know you played around with people, but I didn't know exactly who.
Yeah, he was on, I guess whenever he was younger, he was on four of Derringer's albums. Four of his projects, really? I guess. Yeah.
Interesting.
So he had to be pretty good because Derringer was...
Derringer was wicked.
They put out Born Innocent 2020.
Okay.
And you know, as far as I know, doesn't really give too much information on the album. I have it, and it gives, as far as the band members, it gives, who is it? As Doogie White / Graham Bonnet as lead singers. Jimmy Waldo on, I believe, drums. Joe Stump, who is a pretty known guitarist, especially around this area, the New York area.
Okay.
He's well known as a guitarist. And Gary Shea is still the bassist.
Nice. And Graham Bonnet is still singing, of course.
Yeah, between him and Doogie White.
Right.
I believe he left for a while, and Graham Bonnet's back with him.
Cool.
But they put out a new album, and the new album's really good. It's really heavy for them. It fits the times for right now for what it is.
That's cool. That's cool. So, fuck yeah.
So Alcatraz. Definitely, you know, check out Alcatraz. You know,
yeah, old school metal, man.
Like I said, they're old school metal. They land on the fence between metal and hard rock. You decide what they are.
Right.
I mean, what's your lost classic, bro?
Yeah,
I
you mean, got a good lost classic that ties in with this piece, CK.
Yeah, Alcatraz.
There you go.
No Parole for Rock and Roll.
Nice. That is a good title, man. That is a good title.
It's just a great album. They have, you know, great songs that were never, people just never heard.
I've never heard it, honestly. I don't know. I'm going to check it out. I've never heard it.
It's still
online.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is. Right. You can stream it everywhere.
I've never heard
of it. The biggest song is Island in the Sun. The other one was Hiroshima Mon Amour.
Right.
Too Young to Die, Too Drunk to Live was a classic.
Right.
Incubus,
it sounds like that title could be played at the Nation, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Too Young to Die, Too Drunk to Live.
Definitely. Incubus, which is instrumental by Yngwie, was on there. So it's a good album. The new CD has instrumental demos as bonus tracks.
Cool.
So they released that a couple years ago. Definitely check it out.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I'll tell you what. I hear some music coming from across the pond. Sounds like some 6-6 fucking 6. All right, 6-6 fucking 6. Going to talk about what we've been listening to, all of us metalheads here. Chris, what about you?
I mean, it ain't all been metal.
I know.
But yeah, that's fucking all right. Actually, earlier today, me and Michael were walking around. And I was listening to some Grindzilla because I gotta love the Grindzilla.
Yeah, Grindzilla's cool.
Like, but I was jamming the
Dying NWA.
Yeah, right. I was jamming up fucking Dying Fetus, Infatuation, Malevolence.
Can't go wrong
with the fucking goddamn Bathing Intros demo on it too. But it's fucking because I love that. It's some fucking Ramallah, fucking. Shadow of Intent. I was jamming some Shadow of Intent.
Okay, that's cool.
Did you check out their new album? New album kicks ass.
I have not. Is it badass?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, fucking A.
Nice. Yeah,
other than that, I don't know.
That's cool. Joey, what about you, dude?
I was on a thrash kick for a little while. Some of the neo thrash, and I was listening to Terrifier, Weapons of Thrash Destruction.
Yeah, Terrorizer's badass.
Terrifier.
Oh, Terrifier, sorry.
I never heard of Terrifier.
No, so not the same band, but I think I linked you in that, CK.
I gotta check it out.
Yeah, it's it was from 2017, but they're from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Oh wow!
It's probably one of my favorite modern thrash albums. But also along with that, I was listening to this band Grindpad, and they are from the Netherlands, and their album's called Violence. And the album, I mean, they're a badass fucking thrash band, but the album covers a chick with a chainsaw cutting a fucking big shark that's jumping out of the water.
Nice.
So, you know, that's I gotta love that.
Yeah, that shark shit. Yeah, yeah.
Combined your love for metal and sharks.
Yeah, exactly. Right,
exactly.
I was listening to Unleash, Where No Life Dwells, which is a classic.
I can never get into them.
No, it's an acquired taste, I think.
Yeah.
I wasn't into them, and then later on in life, I got more into them.
Yeah.
Like whenever I used to, I was like, yeah, fuck them. And then I don't know. I got a little older. I was like, all right. And one of the last things I was listening to is actually a hip hop album, because my buddy up in Canada he's got a label called EOA Fam, and he fucking put out another compilation,
yeah,
which he does this underground hip hop compilation, and I talked about the last one, Slick Slimy Goons, and this one's Big Grimy Goons, and it's all this hip hop songs, and then one Goremonger song on there.
So. Oh, that's funny.
But he raps hard as hell, and I appreciate him.
That's
so
cool, man.
Definitely fucking bring it up.
Very cool. What about you, CK?
I've been listening to a lot of shit. But this is a lot like a lot of Zeppelin for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Right
on. Even Four, which I haven't put on in years.
Yeah.
I listened to, and
it's a good one.
No, it's a classic. New Flotsam.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I've been jamming the fuck out of that. Blood in the Water.
The New McCartney, which, if you don't know, I'm a huge Beatles / anything that has to do with Beatles fan. The New Halloween, which kicks ass. Mastodon, who I love.
I hate
and this
nothing
band
against
called
you. I just there's something about Mastodon I just could never get into.
Yeah, I've heard only a few songs. We played with them that one time, but that was long before they became anything. But they were good, and they were real nice and cool guys to hang out
with. No, musically very talented. I just, there was something about that.
Just not your thing.
Yeah,
it's an acquired, sometimes they're acquired taste for some people.
Right.
Right.
Trouble, and the last one was a band called Chalice of Sin. And that's got the singer Wade Black, who was in a couple of bands. He was in Crimson Glory after Midnight left, and couple other bands, but
that's cool.
Definitely a cool band to check out too.
Hell yeah. Flotsam and Jetsam for me, the new one, Blood in the Water, plus the last two are fucking phenomenal. And even the original stuff. I was listening to Hammerhead today. I also been going back. We played with these guys back in the day. Byzantine, love those fucking guys. They're so unbelievably talented. And their latest, which is 2017, The Cicada Tree, is fucking amazing. Anything from them is cool, but they are very unique. They're from West Virginia. They don't sound like anything. They sound like 10 bands in one. They do all kinds
exactly.
of shit. Very, very talented. The bass players, they've had a few, are all great. The guitar players shred. The drummers are strong. I mean, everything about them is cool.
Not one weak link in that band.
No, and real nice guys. I actually messaged them about doing an interview with OJ, the singer, and so I think that is going to happen, so that's cool.
Awesome. That'd be awesome.
He hasn't got back with a date yet, but he reached out and said he would do it, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that'll be coming up. And of course, we always talk about the fucking 666 Club, you know.
Yeah.
Our Patreon, yeah. We thank those that are members of the club. There's a strong few.
Thank you much.
And yeah, thank you guys. It's only $3 a month, Chris. They get some cool shit.
Yep, discounts. You get the episodes early as soon as they're ready to go.
Yep.
You get
karaoke stuff when
you
I
get
do it.
Special episodes that nobody gets to hear for fucking months and months.
Right.
Later.
We're still holding on to one, Joey.
Yeah.
The fucking Capone episode.
We're slighting it for a release.
Yes.
But what's cool about that is we have a new one coming up.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
going to be a badass.
It is going to be badass. So I'll link to that in the episode description, but patreon.com/murdermetalmayhem. You can join the club. $3 a month is all it is. So we appreciate it.
Hey, are you curious how to support us and what we do? Just go there and hit that up.
Exactly.
That's perfect.
Yeah. Now, Joey, you've got a fucking show coming up, don't you?
I do.
Gore-monger show?
Yeah, in less than 2 weeks.
Awesome.
Saturday, July 24th. Up at Reggie's in Chicago, which I'm stoked
that's
on.
That's a good spot.
Right?
No, that's a famous club up there.
It's a lot of metal up there. So I'm playing with, I'm doing a Gore-monger set, but I'm playing this band Bitru, who's a black death band from Colombia, is coming up. So I'm stoked on that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And Sacrificial Massacre is playing. Dissenter is playing, which I fucking love those.
Yeah,
dudes.
Those guys are sick.
And then the Monkey Man's going to be there. So Saturday, July 24th, if anybody's up by Chicago, go check out Reggie's. Come peep out the Gore-monger set. See Bitru represent.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. That's very, very cool. So, yeah, everybody up there in the Chicago area, got a lot of Chicago listeners. Chicago back to number one.
Yeah, I saw that.
Listening, and I saw CK, I think today or yesterday, Danbury back in the top 10. So
finally.
Always good to see. Now, we were talking about CK dealing with some tough news. And, you know, Tom Hunting, the drummer from Exodus, has been in a big fight. He just went through a total gastrectomy, which is the removal of his stomach. Due to the cancer that they found. So that's tough, but there's been a lot of people, you know, donating money, and Tom, I think, donated a drum set, and they're raffling shit off, and they're helping him out. That's really cool to see metalheads come together.
I believe he has the same cancer that Dio had.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
I'm not sure, but...
Wow.
I believe, don't quote me.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that.
So, you know, we wish Tom the best. Fucking love Exodus. Yeah. One of my favorite bands. So they're fucking amazing. And he was a real nice guy. Me and my son went and seen them play up in Joliet. And there's an Italian place across the street, which is fantastic. If you go to the Forge, go to the Italian place across the street. And we were eating and we got up to leave and they were coming in. Gary Holt,
right.
Tom Hunting, Lee... And the singer wasn't, Zetro wasn't there, but everybody but him was out there and super nice, let us take pictures with him and stuff. And I had a Hannibal Lecter shirt on, and Tom Hunting's like, dude, I love that shirt. Where'd you get it?
Yeah.
And I was talking to him about that. So super nice guy.
Yeah,
so
yeah, they all seem down to earth.
Very down to earth. So yeah, you just hate to hear this kind of stuff, you know.
Y'all metalheads need to come together for my homie CK the same way y'all come together for Hunting. What up?
That's right. That's right. Well, thankfully we got our listeners do support CK, but this is just to Tom Hunting, such an icon and for so long, and it's just really cool to see metalheads coming together.
Yeah, definitely.
You know? All right. Well, we've done our fair share of metal tonight. So CK, tell us what the fuck we gotta do.
Get our mayhem on.
Thanks for calling Alcatraz Swim Lessons. If the water doesn't freeze you to death, the sharks will take care of the rest. How can I help you?
I was calling about swim lessons for my little girl.
Aw, I'm sure she's precious. How old is she?
Thanks. She's 5.
Well, that may be a bit young for our program. It could be a real challenge to fight the currents to avoid getting crushed by the rocks along the shore. If she's not strong enough, she'll end up in the ocean as fish food. We'll need you to sign a waiver for her.
The fuck? She don't even know how to swim, motherfucker. That's why I'm calling you. She's 5.
I understand, sir, but our program is a vigorous one. You may want to consider our little convict program, where we start them out with life vests and a shank to stay afloat and keep those sharks away. The frigid water kills them in about an hour, so they learn to move quickly. The kids that survive that program stand a better chance to learn how to swim. So, can I sign her up? Some Alcatraz swim lessons. Oh, yeah. That was a brand new commercial we did here to recently. We love doing those. I was doing the voice of the narrator, and of course, Chris, that was you as the caller. That was good. We love those because a lot of them, we don't know who's going to do them. It's just like, you do that one. All right, I'll do this one. Some of them, when I write them, I can hear Joey's voice or I can hear Chris's voice. And of course, CK, you get in on those too. We got more coming up in some future episodes.
Oh, yeah, those are awesome.
Those are always
so much fun.
They are. I got some good outtakes. I got a little blooper rule. It's about a blooper
roll.
Yeah,
it's a good, one.
About a minute or so of it. So
I gotta say, Chris has the most.
What? Come
if
on,
we're
like
keeping score.
Saying I fuck up a lot.
No, not at all.
You play the challenging roles, like that Ramirez one where you were trying to talk like that.
I wish
that
would have
been so funny.
If you made it through the whole thing, that would have been fucking.
Oh, that
would have
been great. So we have a lot of fun doing those. Before that was the band Alcatraz and their song "Too Young to Die, Too Drunk to Live."
Too young to die, too drunk to live. Chris, tell us your mayhem story.
Chris, speaking of that, Chris, what you said you got a little mayhem for us tonight.
Yes, I do. Get ready for these gunshots, boys.
No,
I'm just kidding. Fucking so, like we said, like we were talking about earlier, my grandfather passed, so we went down south for his funeral and everything. So we're staying in this hotel. So like me, my brothers, our whole family are just in these three hotel rooms. Two of them are right across the hallway from each other. The other one's across the hallway and down one door. So, like, these doors are open the entire time. We just got our doors open back and forth. It's like, you see how just white trash we just made this whole entire floor of this hotel? We're just running around all over fucking, like, don't give a shit. We got music playing in one, people watching TV in the other one, just doing what we want to do. So,
right.
Me, my dad, my brother, and my cousin, who him and his parents were staying two floors above us, like, my cousin comes down and hangs out with
who,
us.
Who, Danny?
Yeah.
No shit?
Yeah. So, we're fucking, we get back to the hotel after the visitation on fucking Friday night, and everybody's like, this is how we're going to do our thing. So we're out, I'm like, let's go outside, fucking, we got a drink, we got a smoke. So we're sitting outside the hotel. There's this bench. I'm like, right outside the door. I'm like, no, this ain't working for me, dude. There's just, I don't like being right outside the hotel.
Yeah, a little visible, around. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking up. No, I didn't give a shit about the visibility. It just didn't feel
camera.
Right.
Oh.
So, there's this guardrail right across on the other side of the damn parking lot. I look over there. I was like, hey, y'all, this is all mowed grass, like a brand new yard, freshly cut. Like, let's hang out over here. So we just grab the bench from the hotel door. We fucking carry it over the rail and
shit. Oh, my God.
We're just like, yep, this is our spot for tonight. So we got all our fucking booze and everything. Fucking, we're hanging out, listening to music, having a good time. And then, like, we're sitting there talking. And then
like
next thing you know.
Like a de facto nation. There.
Yeah. And then the next thing you know, up on the third floor, my daughters are opening the goddamn hallway door. They're like, hey, guys, what are you doing? We're like, I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like,
oh,
they're
my
just
God.
Like, this is like, we don't care. Just, it's, wow. We're doing white trash shit. Don't
Shawbacks
care.
Shawbacks have taken over.
Yeah, like, we took it over. So then, like, so my cousin.
Did you get thrown out of the hotel?
Do what? No, we didn't kick out of the hotel. Hell no, we didn't kick out of the hotel. Everybody there was super nice to us the whole time.
Awesome.
So, like,
that's cool.
So, like I said, we took our own spot with the hotel bench and everything, just doing our thing. So, like, my cousin Daniel, fucking, who we were just talking about.
Right.
The same dude, you met him up
in
Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes,
yeah. He came to see us at Shakers.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know how old he is. He's fucking, I'm going to guess 25 minimum. I don't know. I don't know how
he's
old
a kid.
He is. Yeah. But anyway, no, he's older than that. Holy shit. I don't know how old he is. But then my nephew, Hunter, he's 17.
Okay.
So, like, we're out there outside the hotel. Like I said, I didn't care about visibility. None of us did. We're just doing our thing. And the lights are glowing on us. I was like, or they were like, you guys want to wrestle or whatever? So, Hunter and Daniel just start wrestling, like going to town.
Oh, damn.
Just going to town, wrestling, tumbling. We're just like sitting there drinking, like watching. And Hunter beat his ass so bad, dude.
Oh, my God.
Dude, it's just like, Daniel, like they were grappling for a while, grappling, and fucking Hunter spun around. And then Daniel tapped, and he's like, sits up, he's like, what the fuck just happened? It was wow. So good, dude. But yeah, we're just doing this at this hotel while we're down there for my grandpa's funeral. All right, funeral.
Well, having a little fun, cutting loose.
Having fun. Yeah, nothing right. wrong with that.
Nothing, but nobody got hurt.
Nobody got hurt. Nobody got arrested. Everything That's was good. Cool. Also, the liquor store right down from the hotel was an old bank, so I called.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's the liquor bank. Like, it's still got the drive-thrus and everything. I had to go through the drive-thru yeah. walking to get there.
Gotta love the drive-thru liquor store.
Yeah. Like, fuck yeah.
Do they have those out there, CK? Drive-thru liquor stores? Yeah, out here they do.
Not as of yet, no.
Well, that's a good story, Chris.
Yeah, it's fun, dude. Like that. Yeah. Love you, Grandpa, but that's how I celebrated.
I just found out today I'm going to be at the Peoria Public Library. They're having an author's fair November 13th. That's a Saturday from 2 to 4, I think it is. I know that's a ways away. Before that, though, Chris, Joey and I, because Chris is going to be in a wedding, so Joey and I are going to be at the Dark History Convention. Hell yeah. That's going to be badass, Joey. That's October 23rd.
Put on by Brian Ward.
Yeah, Brian does all those. They're amazing. We're excited about it. We'll be talking more about that as we get close. Probably have Brian on because Brian's a good dude, and we'd like definitely. Having Brian on the show. And so, so we'll have Brian on when we get closer. But October 23rd, put it on your radar because Joey and I will be there at the booth. I'm going to have books. I'm also going to have the podcast stuff, t-shirts, and the activity books, and we'll be there.
So much other things going on at the convention.
Oh yeah, like, Jeff Gaither's going to be there.
Part of it, like.
Jeff Gaither would be worth going just for that because his booth is always over the top. And we'll bring the forearm with us, maybe a mask or two. That'd be cool. Yeah. So. All right. Another thing, I got my Creation of Chaos book is out. Thank you to everybody ordered it. Thank you, CK. I know you said you reread it again. And
I reread it after I proofread it and did my beta reading. I read it again.
Awesome.
And just as good as the first time. If
Hell
not
yeah,
better.
Dude. Hell yeah. Well, I try to hone them down as I get the editing process going, so... That's cool that you got to see the finished, polished copy. So I've been entering quite a few of those stories in some contests, as well as an anthology or two. There's one that wanted creepy, scary, holiday theme stories.
Right.
So I sent in the wreath to that one.
Came in the right place for that.
Yeah, and then there was one just yesterday I did that was a contest for... whether it be true or made up urban legends, and I submitted my story, They Came to Darkness, which is about an urban legend I created. And so I'm excited that that's going on. But I'll link to in the episode description how to order the book if you're interested, a book poster and a bookmark, sign all of it, and send it to you, U.S. mail, and... U.S., it's $19.95 or $20 shipping included.
Right.
And outside the U.S., just email me at pete@murdermetalmayhem.com and I'll quote you a price based on your address. So
definitely worth the cost.
Thank you.
Won't be disappointed.
And I got the Audible stuff uploaded. I'm working on a tweak on the cover because they have very specific requirements. And so once that's done... It takes, they said, 7 to 10 days, and it'll be up on Audible and iTunes. So I will keep you posted, but there was so much work. The book is 10.5 hours long, Chris, on Audible. So it's legit. There's 400 pages in the physical. So.
And I think you definitely put more hours than that into it.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah. At least triple that, I would say.
That was a fight, wasn't it?
Yeah, I had to do it twice. Yeah, I learned my lessons with that. So anyway, I'll keep you guys posted on the audio version because our 666 Express with all our voices is on there.
Hell yeah.
Got some In Malice's Wake music in the outro and intro. And so, yeah, so I'm excited about the way it turned out. All right, we got a killer cage match tonight, gentlemen. Fight, we take fight. 70 killers that we came up with, 70 objects for him to fight with. And, Chris, we have our listeners pick some random numbers to tell us who's going to fight and what they're fighting with.
Yes, sir. Once again, we got Mason Robertson, we got Josh Walls, and we got Stephen. I'm sorry, Lyles. So, thank you for thank you.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. guys. We have a good one tonight, Joey. A crazy, could be considered a mismatch if there ever was one.
Yeah, who do we got? I'm going to call it a mismatch. And we got the Iceman, Richard Kuklinski, and he's going to fight the Nurse Slayer, Richard Speck. And now we're saying this is Richard Speck when he slayed the nurses.
Not titties.
Not when he was snorting coke off cocks and fucking grabbing his
titties.
Not
doing that bad stuff.
So Richard Kuklinski, the Iceman, versus Richard Speck.
Nice. And CK, they got a couple of interesting objects to fight with here.
Yeah, they'll be fighting with an endless pot of boiling water.
Wow.
And a wiffle ball bat. Ooh. Which, by the way, wiffle ball is made in Shelton, Connecticut.
Nice.
Shout out. Wiffle ball,
The variable is a hungry Bengal tiger on acid.
Damn. Chris, that could be interesting. We got the Iceman, Richard Kuklinski. Yeah. Against Richard Speck in a cage with an endless pot of boiling water and a wiffle ball bat, and there's a fucking hungry Bengal tiger on acid in the fucking cage. Right. So what's going to happen?
The tiger's already tripping balls. He might be hungry, but he's probably just laying there looking at the ceiling.
I would hope so, man. What the fuck is going on? The tiger is game over, man.
Yeah.
If he's fighting, everybody's going to lose.
Everybody's dead.
Right.
Tiger wins.
But he's on acid.
But he's tripping balls, dude. He's just like, dude.
All right, so he's rolled up in a corner.
So then I figure if Richard Speck gets that fucking boiling water, he tries to fucking throw it at fucking Kuklinski one time. If he misses, you're done with, boy. He's going to grab that wiffle bat, shove it up your ass, and then beat you with that pot of boiling water, and you're fucking done for, dude.
I wonder if Kuklinski would get a hold of a video camera so he could videotape him pouring the boiling water slowly over his body.
Sending this to your
family.
Like
burning his dick off and shit. Yeah, fucked up, because we know the Iceman is fucking brutal.
And he'd probably just go throw him next to the tiger, and when the tiger sobers up, just be like, food.
Right?
Fucking right.
Dude, of all the parts of the Kuklinski case that freaks me out the most, it's the ones that he put in the caves with the rats and the video camera. That's fucked up.
Definitely.
That is fucked up.
What you got, Joe?
Yeah, what do you think, Joe?
I mean, like I said, I felt I've been saying since the beginning of today that I felt like this was a mismatch. So I'm going to go with Kuklinski, but how I'm going to do it is, Kuklinski is just going to walk up with that fucking wiffle ball bat.
Right.
He did it like this. He did it like that. He did it with a wiffle ball bat. So, yeah. He's just going to fucking beat fucking Richard Speck to death with that wiffle ball bat, because he's like, I kill with everything. I don't give a fuck what it is. I'll kill you with a fucking wiffle ball bat and show you how badass I am. And then he's going to take the body fucking of fucking Richard Speck, throw it over to the Bengal acid tiger. And then so the tiger can eat it. Kuklinski's going to go over and make friends with that Bengal tiger because he just fed him. And the Iceman's so badass, he's going to take that pot of boiling water and just fucking drink it.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
You can't melt this ice.
CK, nice. You got anything to throw in the ring with this crazy-ass mantra?
You fucking put me after Joey.
I know.
I'm just gonna say Kuklinski. Period.
Yeah, I don't see how Kuklinski loses. He's too badass.
Nah, he's bad.
And he gets that wiffle ball bat. I think he's gonna beat him to death with the bat in some kind of combo with the boiling water burning him.
You know what else came to my mind that I thought would have been pretty badass?
What's
if
that?
You fucking slice off the ends of the wiffle ball bat, shove it down fucking Speck's throat, and then just pour the boiling water.
Oh, wow, like a mug. Yeah.
That would be pretty badass.
It's got the hole at the bottom.
Yeah.
So it would slowly drip out.
There's a little hole
out
at the end of a wiffle ball gun.
Yeah.
So you can put that end down and put the water in the other.
Pour it in the top. Oh, my God. Damn, that's brutal.
That's a good one.
We are fucked up. All right. Well, that's been a good one. Always a favorite in the show, the Killer Cage match, exclusively here on Murder Metal Mayhem.
Fuck yeah.
All right, I think we've done plenty of mayhem tonight, guys, so let's hit the fucking outro. yeah, man. Some new Flotsam and Jetsam with their song The Wicked Hour.
Shit, we're shredding.
From the latest album, Blood in the Water. Me and CK were talking about that. Just such a great album.
Hell yeah.
Came out in early June, getting really good reviews, and they got some limited touring in the Southwest because they're based out of Arizona. But I'm anxious to see those guys do big things. They're just such a great band, been around for so long, since 86 with their debut. So, all right.
Pretty soon they're going to open up. They're going to open up their touring schedule.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. All right, big thanks to our buddy Tex for coming on with us tonight. Yeah. Always does a great job. Yeah. Great perspective, Joey, from a guy that's done the prison corrections for quite a few years and knows a lot about it. Death row and everything.
Andy showed his flexibility because he not only does the prison episodes with us every now and then, he'll jump in for another.
Yeah, episode. Tex is just a good dude.
Murder on the Bayou, man.
That's right, Murder on the Bayou. I forgot about that one. How could I forget about that one? Bumper music tonight, Alcatraz, Flotsam and Jetsam, and Megadeth. CK's intro music, Chris, is by Crysics, which band?
What up?
Crysics. Joey, some Murder Metal Mayhem intro.
Low 12.
Hell yeah. And the 6-6 fucking 6 music, CK, by our friends.
None other than our friends, Onslaught.
Hell yeah, dude, from the UK. Thanks to all of you guys out there listening. We keep seeing the numbers coming in, and it's just really humbling. And thank you very, very much. Great comments this time. Chris, why don't you take the first one, brother?
I hope I pronounced this right, but Tracy Silvis.
I think that's right.
Silvis says, you guys fucking rule. I'm a listener from El Paso, Texas, and I heard you guys at a buddy's house on the 4th of July. I love the show and really enjoyed the Snowtown episode you did. Awesome. That's awesome you heard it on the 4th
of
July.
Hell yeah. That was a good one, I thought. Some UK craziness, Joey. What about the next one, Joe?
Thank you so much.
Carl Housley commented, love me some Murder Metal Mayhem. I've been listening for just over 2 years and think this is one of the best podcasts out there. I really love the Killer Cage matches, and the funny mayhem stories are the best.
Nice. Yeah, that's definitely the fun parts of the show, doing that stuff. CK, what about the next one, dude?
John Stanley. I don't know if he's related to Paul Stanley.
I don't know. That's a good question.
I crank your podcast up every Friday night after I get off work. I have a 2-hour drive home, so it works out great for me to unwind and have a few laughs listen to you. I'm a listener in Chicago. Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah, John. Thank you very much. That's
I'm just
awesome.
Glad it wasn't I crank off to your podcast.
Yeah, that would be kind of weird. That would have been weird.
That would have been better, dude.
I would accept that.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
I'd take it.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, like, all right,
I would accept it.
And then Metal Motherfucker 666, you got to love that, commented, I love you guys. I'm in Fresno, California. And all my roofing crew, you got to love that. The roofers out there listening to you guys while we work. Nothing like hammering nails to some sick metal, fucking horns right. way up.
Hell
That's
yeah.
fucking awesome.
I used
awesome.
To be a roofer too, so keep it up, boys. I know it's hard work.
It is, and it's fucking hot up there too. So, yeah, especially in Fresno or is he from? Fresno, California. All right, don't forget to check out Murder Metal Mate. What's that, CK, bro?
That's what my dad used to do. He was a carpenter, so.
Oh, yeah.
I know all about that shit. Hard work.
It is hard work. Don't forget to check out MurderMetalMayhem.com to listen to the past episodes. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or subscribe to the YouTube channel. There's all sorts of ways you guys can listen. Chris, I've been listening on Audible. I've been listening to us through Audible because for some reason with CastBox, it speeds up the episode. It sounds funny listening to us. At first I heard it, and I'm like, I thought it was something I did. I'm like, tell me we don't fucking sound like that on the fucking wide internet, you know?
I thought you could control the speed.
I'm guessing
on
that's
CastBox.
What I did, because it sounds funky, and I listened to it on Audible,
you sound
and
like
it's normal.
Chipmunks and shit.
Not quite to that, but it's sped up
it's
to
different.
Where you could tell something's off, and I bet it's got to be something like that.
Right.
I don't know why you would change that. Like, why would you want to?
I listen to it on Apple, and you have the for some reason you could go 2x or one times.
That's
weird.
That must be what I did. I must have somehow clicked something that made it do that.
But,
so leave us comments. You listen on iTunes.
Obviously, I listen on iTunes. I listen to regular speed.
Right, right. Well, I'm listening to it on Audible, and it sounds great. So thanks for the comments and stuff. Support the show by joining our 666 Club, patreon.com/murdermetalmayhem. To join, just $3 a month. Also, PeteAltieri.com or creationofchaos.com if you want to buy the new one. And I'll link to that in the episode description. Creation of Chaos 3 just came out. Audible will be coming pretty soon.
Check
out my new podcast at voiceofdread.com. If you like horror, I'll be starting that up again. I had to take the month of June off because I just had so much shit going on at work. It was insane. So that'll be starting up, and we're going to do our Maximum Overdrive episode.
Yeah, we
which
are,
will be
dude.
Fun.
I can't wait to do
that'll
that.
Be awesome.
No, I can't wait.
That'll
to
be
do
a
that.
Lot of fun, and we'll do that all as a group. We can't let him go, though, without hearing a karaoke song. Chris, I remember playing this for you at Pete Saradovich's house when I did this one. It was early on in the podcast. I did this one with prison and that sort of thing.
It's an earlier recording.
It is, but I didn't have time to do a new one, and this one was just too perfect for it. So crank it up, and until next time, keep one foot in the gutter.
And keep your fist pulling at the pits of despair.
Oh, that doesn't sound
right. Oh, you got that right.
Ricky was a young boy. He had a heart of stone. Lived 9 to 5 and he worked a stringer to the bone. Just barely out of school, came from the edge of town. Fought like a switchblade so no one could take him down. No, he had no money, no, no good at home. Walked the streets a soldier and he fought the world alone. And now it's 18 and life, you got it. 18 in life, you know. Your crime is time, and it's 18 in life to go. 18 in life, you've got it. 18 in life, you know. Your crime is time, and it's 18 in life to go. It kept his motor running, but it never kept it clean. They say he loved adventure. Ricky's the wild one. He married trouble, had a courtship with a gun. Bang, bang, shoot him up. The party never ends. You can't think of dying when the bottle's your best friend. And now it's 18 and life, you've got it. 18 and life, you know. Your crime is time, and it's 18 and life to go. 18 and life, you've got it. 18 and life, you know. Your crime is time, and it's 18 and life to go. Accidents will happen, they all heard Ricky say. He fired his six shot to the wind, and the child for a child away. You know, your crime is time, and it's 18 and life to go. 18 and life, you've got it. 18 and life, you know. Your crime is time, and it's 18 and life to go.